Hey guys, this is Evan with the Lucky 10,000, and you can't get much luckier than you guys because Emily and I, today's episode, we recorded about aliens, extraterrestrials, with a lot of stories, a lot of science, a lot of pop culture, and this was supposed to be the next to last episode of the season, but you can't just do an hour about aliens, especially if you're going to include pop culture, so we have split this episode into two. So you're going to get one extra episode this season. Aren't you lucky? And we hope you got lucky tonight, and we hope you enjoyed the episode.
You are a part of the Lucky 10,000 with your hosts, Evan and Emily. Season 2, Astrophysics.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
This is Evan.
This is Emily.
And we are the Lucky 10,000, the podcast that gets you luckier than making contact with a species other than ours that doesn't live on this planet, which, in all reality, we probably haven't done yet.
Oh, is that how
you left out a note?
Ah, man.
And I would like to thank Podbean and Stitcher for having us. I would also like to thank the Tangent Bound Network for including us on their awesome list of shows. And if you want to email us, it's lucky10000@gmail.com. Our Twitter is lucky_10k.
Come on, Evan.
And our Facebook group page is lucky10000. You can also find us on the Bearded Pods Network, featuring not only us, but the Bearded Ones comedy podcast, featuring not only featuring also myself and Teddy and the Bassman. We would like to let you know that the fundraiser for Bassman is still going on. We had an awesome improv show where we raised some money for them. We raised about $300 for them.
We did. It was fantastic.
Which is pretty amazing. It was a lot of fun. You were great. You were great.
Oh.
And so we're gonna leave a link to that fundraiser in the site. We're less than $2,000 away from our goal, which is amazing.
So close.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Bring it on, folks.
So,
give us the monies.
That is awesome. I would like to take the opportunity, because this is our next to last show of the season, to say, first off, it's been great. I've really enjoyed it.
It's been great, Evan.
I think you've done a great job.
You've been great.
No, you've been great.
No.
Oh. Click, 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 click.
Come back.
I know geeks don't like genuine emotion. I'm not a fan of it either, actually.
And yet here you are.
And yet here I am. But today, we're going to talk about something that we actually have addressed on this podcast before. However, we're going to approach it from a much more scientific place. And yeah, we're going to talk a lot more pop culture. Because I think when Carissa and I did an Aliens episode, it was just basically like, what do you believe? What do you believe? What do you think it happened? Blah, blah, blah. Which is great.
Yeah.
But now this season has been focused much more on actual science. Before we get, though, into actual science, just for your benefit, I would like to repeat my UFO story.
Oh my gosh, now, I'm so ready.
If you've heard me tell this story on The Bearded Ones, or you've heard me tell this story on Lucky 10,000, fuck you, I'm telling it again.
Skip ahead to like the 5-minute mark, and yeah, Evan will still
long.
Probably be talking, but it's
probably
fine.
So I'm very fond of saying that in my late teens, up until about the age of 20, I was the person in my group of friends considered the sober friend. I'd never done anything at all.
Wild and crazy.
Nothing that would get me intoxicated or anything. So I'm not saying I didn't do that stuff once I turned 20. I did, but I didn't do it up until that point. So I was about, I don't know, 18, 19, chilling out of my house one night when I get a knock on the door. Wasn't expecting any company. And I hear my mom answer the door, and then she calls me into the kitchen where our door was, and I see two of my friends standing out on the threshold of the door.
See, I thought I might have heard this story. I definitely haven't.
Oh, good.
Okay, I'm ready.
And so I walk outside. I stand there in the doorway. I was like, hey, what's up, guys? And they're looking at me, and their pupils are massive. And they go, oh, hey, dude. And they're trying their best to maintain. And they go, can you step outside for a second? And I was like, yeah. What's going on? So I go outside, close the door, and we're standing there in the dark in my yard. And they go, okay, we are tripping balls right now.
Oh, no.
And we're pretty sure we just saw a UFO. So we need a sober person to verify.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it is possible to have shared hallucinations on LSD. I've heard of it before.
Hmm.
It never happened to me, but I never really hallucinated. But, like, I know someone who did have a shared hallucination on it. So it's just like, yeah, they could have absolutely
thought they saw something and nothing was there. So I was like, fuck yeah, adventure time. So we got into my car and I drove down. And what they said happened, that looks delicious, by the way. What is that?
I'm just eating a spring roll from Southern Press Juicery where I work. It's an avocado basil roll. My friend Brian McKenna makes them. They're so tasty.
That looks delicious.
It's really good.
I'll have to go get some of that. So there was this old, housing development they were building down the street from my house, and it was only like halfway finished. So there was like a big hole where they dug out some trees and stuff like that. And we drove there and we got out of the car and they're describing to me what happened. Now, a lot of times when you're on the LSDs, they say, being outside is really cool because, you know, you get to sort of experience nature and all this other stuff. So they were just standing around there, according to them. When all of a sudden, from out of this ditch, this thing came up completely silently.
This is what they say.
Yes.
Okay.
In front of them and then just went off into the sky. So I was like, fuck, yeah. So we're looking around for it. We don't see anything. We wait around a few minutes. And then I'm like, yeah, I guess I should just take you guys back home. And they're like, yeah, I guess we'll never know. So we're driving home. And all of a sudden, I hear one of them go, there it is. And I turn to my left. And about a couple of hundred yards away, probably about 100 feet off the ground, is this thing. It's about the size of a Winnebago. It's got like four white lights on the bottom, and it is not making a sound, but it is hovering about 100, 200 feet above the ground.
What?
It's completely dark, so I can't make out the exact shape of it. All I can see is the lights on the bottom. And I'm like, okay, if it's a helicopter, we would definitely be able to hear it from this distance. So I was going to turn around, and then I see in my headlights this old like dirt road coming up to our left. And it goes straight, and the road goes straight towards the thing. So I was just like, hit the brakes, spun into this road, just tooling down the road. And we're all just staring at this in my car, and they're like flipping out because they're already flipping out.
So it's like up in the sky.
No, it's in the sky.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And I remember like we're just thinking, oh, my God, this is amazing. I've never seen anything like it. We're going to get close to this thing. Oh, my God. And then all of a sudden, I take my eyes off of it and look in front of me, and the road is a complete dead end. It's like nothing but forest. And so I have to hit the brakes real quick before we like hit trees or something. And then I'm like, well, I'm not letting this thing go. So I start to do a 3-point turn on this road. And as we're going down the leaving the road to get back on the main road to see if we can get close to it, the car just starts like, and then I have to stop the car and get out, and we got a flat.
No.
And I didn't have the not the jack, but I didn't have the thing that you used to get the hubcap off.
Yeah.
So we had to walk back to my mom's house, which was about a mile or two down the road. Get that, walk back to the car, hoping we'd see something.
This is back in the day before cell phones.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm that old. And we never saw it again.
Oh, my gosh.
We couldn't get a bead on where it went because our backs were to it by the time we turned around, because we thought, oh, we're going to get back on the road and then we're going to go find it again.
Right.
And by the time we got out of the car to check on the flat, it was gone. And even me and a couple of other friends went down to the same place the next night to see if we could see it again. And nope, nothing. Now, I'm not going to tell you I think that was an alien. I will say.
But it might have been.
I will say that it is technically a UFO. It was a flying object. I couldn't tell you what the fuck it was. So it was unidentified.
Okay.
Do you have any sort of similar experience with anything otherworldly?
No.
I guess I'm just a more interesting person.
You are. I've never had any kind of...
I mean, that's the only thing that's ever happened to me like that. I've never seen a ghost. Experience. I've never seen a Sasquatch or the Loch Ness Monster or anything like that. But that is... by definition to me, an encounter with a UFO.
Yeah.
Could have been a military thing. Could have been somebody's fucking drone. I don't know. But
they wouldn't have had drones back then.
Maybe.
Back
who knows?
In the day.
Could have been some construction thing. I don't know.
Could have been. That's amazing, Evan.
Yeah. But now that's, you know, anecdotal and really doesn't supply any science or information on the possibility of extraterrestrial
sure
life.
Sure doesn't.
What do you got
from the
world of science?
Okay, what I got. Basically,
loving is what you got. I said, remember that.
Moving on. So basically, alien seeking scientists describe life as any living form.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if we're thinking of like alien life.
Mm-hmm.
Any living form, including microbes.
Oh, yeah.
Which I never really thought about.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, they're going to be like little green men.
Mm-hmm.
No way. Like,
right.
they could totally be just like little one-celled organisms, that's, like living their
yes.
best life.
I've
like,
heard that before, too, and it makes like, so oh, much yeah. more sense than to think that there's this uber-intelligent society out there that we're going to encounter sometime.
Yeah.
We've probably already encountered microbes from space.
Possibly.
I mean, meteors, comets, anything that crashed into the Earth might be carrying something.
Yeah, I know that there is a theory that all life on Earth is basically extraterrestrial.
We talked about that once.
Yeah, once on the earlier on that like,
I should have looked up an article on it, but I didn't.
A meteor runs into the Earth and like has these like space particles mm-hmm. and microbes from another planet. They fall off and they're like, "Oh hi, I'm a one-celled organism. This is perfect here."
That's exactly what happened.
Life.
And then they created a cow. They took the cow back up to their planet. They gave each other an anal probe, and then.
So basically. I wanted to kind of like think about like, is Earth special?
Mm-hmm.
Like what, like some people are like, no, we're the best and magicalist things that are out there. And Neil deGrasse Tyson has really compelling arguments about
yeah.
the whole thing. But basically, yeah, there's a just a super high probability that there is a life somewhere else in the universe. If not, inside our own solar system.
Right.
Right? The odds are just way in that favor. And he talks about in this one essay that he wrote about Copernicus,
mm-hmm.
you know, about, you know, Nicholas is like hanging out and he's like, the sun is probably the center of the universe,
right.
probably not the
and
earth.
Everyone
and everyone's
went,
like,
fuck you,
that's
man.
Wrong. But he was the one who was really able to like move
mm-hmm.
the sun into the center of our solar system.
Right.
And so if we kind of like use that metaphor as like, if we think the earth is like the center of all life
right.
in the universe, that probably isn't true.
Right.
You know, that the chances are that's not it. So I'm just scrolling
it's
through.
Okay.
I have like paragraphs. Oh yeah, put in the little paper thing. Yeah. He says something really cool.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a single planet called Earth,
yes,
and on this Earth there are like beetles, algae, sponges, jellyfish, snake, giant sequoia trees, like
mm-hmm.
all of these like forms of life
mm-hmm.
that exist, we would probably expect that same variety of life
mm-hmm.
to happen outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a cool place that maybe can tie into science fiction.
Oh, it will.
Because he's talking about like, he says, every science fiction movie that we see has these like alien beings that walk on two feet,
yep.
that have two eyes,
yep. two
that
arms,
have little slits for ears,
yep.
that have little thingies that like can smell,
yep.
like that are basically humans. They're
yes.
humanoid people.
Yes.
So why? And again, this is kind of like makes me think of the Copernicus
mm-hmm.
model again of like the human being like the center of
mm-hmm.
everything. It's like, well, the human is not the epitome of life forms, you know? Like, it's actually not really that great for space travel.
No.
Like, if there are smarter beings out there that can space travel, they are probably not this size. They're probably itty-bitty.
Well, and if you think about it, how many different species are on planet Earth alone? We are one species.
Yeah.
Everything else looks nothing like us.
And I guess it's like, you know, this is kind of where it gets into film theory
mm-hmm.
a little bit about like how like we are making films for humans to digest.
Right.
So if you have like a jellyfish showing up,
right.
that maybe is less menacing than
yes.
like a humanoid
but
thing.
You know,
showing
when
up.
We get to the sort of pop culture section, I'll get into that because I found sort of an interesting correlation with that
mm-hmm.
that I never thought about before. But sometimes it's also out of necessity. You look
yeah.
at the original Star Trek; they didn't really have a huge budget, so
right.
when they're
we're not doing Jabba the Hutt.
No, when their main villains, the Klingons, pop up, which they know is going to happen a lot because they're the main antagonist. What
yeah.
do? You just put makeup on these guys and make their skin darker and give them goatees and ooh,
make
it's aliens.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time, aliens in Star Trek are people with just some shit on their forehead.
Yeah.
And we,
it's true.
Statistically speaking, though, any life outside this planet is going to be extraterrestrial life. And
yeah.
since we are only one of many species on this planet, it's very egotistical to assume that that life would be like us.
Yeah.
But that's also one of the weird things that I've noticed that is sort of where science and religion butt heads. Because I have talked to people who are pretty devout Christians who I've talked to them about aliens and they won't accept that idea.
Right.
Because that would mean, since A, aliens are never really mentioned in the Bible, and B, according to the Bible, the Lord made humanity and we are his favorite creation. Therefore, there really shouldn't be anything like us other than us out there in the universe. So a lot of people who are very religious simply refuse to believe that there might be extraterrestrials out there. Again, the ego of man to think that we are the prized thing.
Isn't it super convenient that, you know, when the Bible was written, that the humans that were transcribing, let us say for argument's sake, the word of God into text, that those same humans maybe had no concept of like stars and planets and alien life. It's weird. Like if the Bible had said something like, by the way, there are these things called like neuron stars.
Yeah.
Hey, they're like red dwarves exist, and when they explode, I would totally be on board with. Yeah, I'd be like, give me more of this book.
Absolutely.
It is telling me things that these people in Mesopotamia would have no access to, and yet it has information about
that.
But
also, like, having human beings write a book about the creator of the universe is a little bit like having Kanye West write his autobiography.
Right.
He is going to be the center of that book and the most important thing ever in the history of mankind in that book.
That's what, you know, I think that's what we do as humans all the time.
Of course we do. We put ourselves into everything.
Left our own devices, we have, you know, Snapchat and Twitter and all this stuff. And that's just like the latest thing of ways that we can like tell stories about ourselves.
And that's what we want to do.
And in the future, we'll look back and be like, oh yeah, these people didn't know much about this thing that is so commonplace. Like I think about, like, I probably said this maybe on the podcast, but like Shakespeare's time, they were eating off of like these, like, the pewter plates and everything. And they were just giving themselves scurvy. Like they were just not like they were poisoning themselves off of their dinnerware. And it's so easy to look back and be like, what idiots. But like,
but it also shows I think the glut of ease to social media and the internet and thing like that has also shown that human beings, for the most part, we are our most important assets, because just look at fucking how many people ignore everything around them just to take a selfie.
Well, I mean, and I would say the same thing about animals in the wild. Like, if you have a deer, like, the deer's not thinking, I wonder what that, how to best conserve the, the environment. Maybe I should eat fewer leaves. Like, it's just like, I'm a deer.
I'm surviving. I'm the most important thing to me.
I'm going to take care of it. Oh, there's a hunter. Skedaddle. Yeah. Like, That's like how evolution has wired us to be like, this, I am important. I am important.
And to our credit, we have become the most dominant species on the planet because of our intelligence going so far beyond that of most animals on the planet. However, it's also, I think, very daunting for us to think that there's another species out there that is that much smarter than us.
And aliens would be. There's
probably.
I have something at the end that I'm just going to like read now, which is fine. But there was one scientist, his name is Grinspoon, but in the whole article, I couldn't find
Is he a Harry Potter
Grinspoon's
character?
Grinspoon's first name, but I, like, love that name. But
Astrophysicus!
Astrophysicist Grinspoon. Did you say Astrophysicus?
Who teaches defense against the dark arts.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's him. But in this interview, they basically said, if there are smart creatures in the universe, odds are they know exactly what to do to make contact with us. And it's like mathematically pretty easy to like predict that they are going to be just much more advanced than us.
Yes.
That we are just these little babies. And if there's anyone trying to contact us, they have just a relationship with math and science that is much longer than ours, that they're able to, they would be able to do it.
I just thought of another pop culture movie I have to add to the list that perfectly illustrates that point.
Add it down. So basically Grinspoon ends up this interview is saying if aliens are trying to contact us, it's probably just our fault that we are missing their signals.
Right.
That like we're just like, what? What was that?
I don't know.
I don't know, guys. But yeah, there's that's kind of the kind of point of view. Sorry. Back to Neil deGrasse Tyson for a second. He was talking about the four most common elements in the universe are hydrogen, helium, carbon, and oxygen. Mm-hmm. Going back to this whole, like, is Earth unique kind of thing. Helium is inert.
Right.
So basically the three most abundant chemically active ingredients are hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen. It just so happens that life on Earth are also made out of those top three ingredients, you know? If life is found on another planet, probably made of those similar, like those top three will probably be in those living forms. Also, so his point is saying, if the living beings on Earth were made out of, molybdenum, bismuth, and plutonium, like if they were made out of like these other three things, then it'd be like, then we must be something special here because like the most abundant chemicals in the universe, we're made out of something different.
Yeah.
We have nothing to do with the rest of the universe. That's so amazing. We're special. We're unique. Right. But we're just vanilla. We are in with the rest of everything.
Never heard that before. Usually what I hear is just statistically speaking, based on all the galaxies that we now know are out there and the whole Goldilocks thing of within each galaxy, you got to find a planet that is in that perfect zone, the Goldilocks zone, to sustain life. It's almost astronomically impossible that there isn't life somewhere else.
Yeah.
But that even makes it more plausible because, why wouldn't another planet have life on it similar to ours? Yeah. Because those are the most... That's awesome.
Yeah. So I just think it's really... Yeah, that, really hit home for me. Absolutely, it did. This really means, Earth is not special.
Right.
Which is totally cool.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, just because Earth is not this special magical place. It's freaking magical that we are existing right now.
Yes.
That's so cool.
Yes.
But it's how cool is it also that there might be other people or other living beings that have different experiences.
Yeah.
It's kind of, when you the white colonizers land in another place and they're like, oh, look, there are already people here. Instead of murdering them, maybe we can be sharing information
with
them.
Well, astrophysicists tend to be much more optimistic. And I'm not going to get into any specific pop culture yet. But one of the themes I run into is that if it's a movie that is more based on science or a story or a TV show that is more based on science, the outcome of us meeting aliens is almost always more positive because astrophysicists have a very optimistic view of any life, any intelligent life that might be out there.
That's great.
So exactly in your metaphor, they come and find us and go, we can teach you how to make your lives better opposed to kill, kill, kill.
Yeah.
But then, if somebody like fucking Jerry Bruckheimer makes a science fiction movie, you want to see explosions.
They're murder aliens.
Therefore, the aliens have to be awful and they want to kill us all. And I guess the theory is if they're intelligent enough to make the technology that would get them here, then they've probably evolved to a point where the kind of things that we're killing each other over aren't even an issue anymore.
Yeah. Like signs.
Yes.
They'd be smart enough to know to not land on a planet.
You would think.
Mostly water.
Those aliens were
idiots.
Assholes.
Okay. The next segment that I have is just what clues are scientists looking for for life? Is that something that fits in or do you want to do?
No, please. Go ahead. Hit me.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Okay. So basically.
This might end up being another two episodes.
I think it might be, man. Clues that scientists are looking for. Chemical signals.
Okay.
Even the smallest microbe living on a distant exoplanet, which is a planet that orbits a sun other than our star. The
our
smallest. What did you say?
Our bilo.
Our bilo. Our target.
There's a bilo at the middle of our galaxy.
It's perfect. Even the smallest microbe can still broadcast a chemical signal that would be visible to sensitive telescopes
really?
In the form of atmospheric gases.
I didn't know that.
That probably wouldn't be there in the absence of life.
I didn't know that.
I know. This is amazing.
So we could potentially observe actual alien life.
Possibly, yeah. Wow. And because the gases are only there because they're being constantly replenished by a living being.
Yeah.
So one of the atmospheric gases that astronomers are looking for is oxygen.
Of course.
Surprise, surprise. Which is obviously plentiful on Earth, being replaced by plants by photosynthesis. It's up in the atmosphere, yeah. And you can see it, you can detect it.
That's amazing.
But the presence of those gases don't necessarily mean that something living is there.
Right.
It could, like, sulfur molecules could come from volcanoes.
Sure.
And there are a couple ways that, like, oxygen could, you know, form. Like, with, she was talking about iridation in the ultraviolet light coming from the stars. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. This was information from Mercedes Lopez Morales at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysicists in Cambridge, Massachusetts. So that was awesome. And most astronomers advocate looking for oxygen as a sign of extraterrestrial life. Right, because that's kind of like what we think of with like carbon-based life forms, which
but now
I,
not all life forms breathe oxygen.
This is, well, I don't think that any life forms can survive without oxygen.
Oh, right, because carbon dioxide and oxygen have to sort of trade with certain animals.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so.
But could they do the same thing with carbon dioxide? Did they mention that?
They didn't. Well, I did see, let me see, methane. Yeah, methane and carbon dioxide.
Oh, there you go.
Is another one, because there was a new study published in Science Advances, italicized, that say that oxygen may not be the best target since it didn't always exist on Earth.
Right.
So that carbon dioxide and methane react with one another, causing the methane to disappear. So we could look for those two gases on another planet. However, methane also can be caused by a lot of different things.
Sure, but at least it'd be a clue. At least it'd be
could be a little
clue.
We need
to investigate this further.
Yeah. There's one of the authors of the study, Joshua Chrisanson Toton. It's amazing. an extraplanet expert at the University of Washington said that you can make a little bit of methane without life.
Mm-hmm.
But to get a lot of methane in the atmosphere, it's pretty hard to explain without life. So if we find a planet that has a lot of methane in the atmosphere,
yeah,
probably a good indicator that there was life or could be life on it.
That's awesome.
I know.
That's amazing.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Another way to search for life would be radio signals and light waves.
Yes.
So for over two decades, the SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Institute, which I love.
I would like to visit there.
Yeah. It's conducted research to understand the origins of life in the universe and to detect and analyze evidence of life emanating from other places in the universe other than Earth.
Great.
And so they're monitoring the universe for signals, for light signals, for radio waves that could be a sign of advanced technology, advanced alien life. And they have the Allen Telescope Array, or the ATA, of 42 radio antennas that are listening for signals over a range of radio frequencies to hear regions around. There are 20,000 red dwarf stars that are closest to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just like tuned to those 20,000 red dwarfs.
I think
dwarfs.
That's what receives the signal at the beginning of contact.
Ooh.
Depending on how long it's been around.
Ding, ding, ding.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, this has been, when was contact made?
In the 90s. I can't remember when the book was written, though.
Well, they said they've been doing this for like two decades, so it could be.
Could be.
It could be
now. Or something very similar that led to what we have now.
Oh my gosh, two decades would have been in 98, so maybe not.
I don't know.
Either way, old.
They had something similar in contact. That's how they got the radio signal.
Oh, perfect. So yeah, basically, in the past, people thought that yellow dwarfs were the stars, like our sun is a yellow dwarf that would be able to harbor life.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, people have been like, red dwarves. Those are the ones that we're looking
for. That's awesome. And you know, the interesting thing too is this, something that just occurred to me, something that happened literally right before we recorded.
Yes.
My cat has this little toy that it's like a glass dome and you put something inside it and you turn it on and it spins it around and he goes up and kind of pokes at it and reaches his little paw into the holes to try and grab it. And that to me, you know, the old expression, curiosity killed the cat.
Murder.
Their curiosity is inherent in most living things.
It's true.
They go to investigate, even you know, a fish, if it sees something stranger that thinks it might be food,
be like,
it will go to
that?
Investigate.
Yeah.
So it stands to reason that if there is an alien species out there, they're just as curious about the possibility of us as we are about them.
This is true.
So not only are we sending signals, but they could be sending signals as well.
They could be bumping them back.
Hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Like 10 fingers on one hand crossed.
Yeah,
10
jellyfish tentacles coming out. Yeah,
claws crossed.
I really want aliens to be jellyfish.
They probably would be.
So yeah, basically, like as we go on, and I think this will kind of be something that we reiterate throughout the thing. As we keep moving forward, we're gonna get better technology, and So right now, the range of the radio dial is measured in the thousands. Over the next 20 years, they're hoping that number could maybe be a million, so that they can have just more frequencies looking at more star systems.
Right.
So it's cool. Another sign that they're looking for. Are UFOs?
Of course.
Observers, but the extraterrestrial experts at SETI are looking for. They review images of alleged alien spacecraft sent to them.
Absolutely.
And this guy is a photographer himself, and he was saying that. Most of these purported UFO sightings are just tricks of the light or internal reflections of a camera lens, just like a lot of, just like a little lens flare. And he's like, sorry.
Awesome.
This is interesting.
Okay.
So in 2015, scientists discovered this star. It is called KIC 8462852. There are a couple more of these.
6309.
Incorrect. But it's located about 1,400 light years from Earth.
Uh-huh.
Scientists were observing this repeated and significant dip in the star, like the star was dimming.
Okay.
About like 22%.
Yeah.
And they were like, what?
Why is that?
This?
Yeah.
And they said that is far more than like an orbiting planet in front of the star. So it's kind of like you think of our sun as gigantic and the Earth going in front of it would not make it dip by 22%.
Right.
They were like, why is this doing this? So basically they were like, this star is doing something really weird. And so one possible explanation by some experts is that there was an alien megastructure.
I've heard of this.
An enormous thing orbiting the star.
Yeah.
Built by a hypothetical alien civilization.
Yeah.
That constructed this. So there's like a Death Star.
That would be.
Going around.
I mean, in one hand, that would be awesome. In other hand, if it is the Death Star.
Terrifying.
A little bit.
Yeah, there's a giant thing that could just show up.
I see this planet called Earth.
But literally, there is no evidence to support this hypothesis.
No, of course not.
At all.
Why couldn't it just be a small planetoid?
Yeah, they're like, it's interesting, but that's it. Now, in February of 2017, a doctoral student found that UFO sightings have hit an all-time high and that most of the sightings are coming from the U.S.
Yeah.
Isn't that so weird?
It is, but also, like, the thing that drives us, but also the thing that sometimes gets in our way, is our imaginations.
Right. We like think like, oh, now we know more about UFOs, so we're going to see more of them.
We have phones that record everything all the time. Most of the time.
But if you think that you have phones that record something all the time, that means you're going to like catch something more often than you're not.
Exactly. But
maybe not.
I think.
You see more lens flares that way.
I don't know that I personally believe aliens have ever visited us. Not intelligent life.
Even
not
with
in
your
spaceships.
Alien story?
I don't think that was an alien. I tend to be very skeptical simply because when the thing happens, I want it to be absolutely verifiable and provable.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So it's like if I see something that I can't explain, it's the same thing as hearing a sound in your attic and immediately going, oh, everybody, there's a ghost up there. It's like, you don't know that.
That's literally what I do.
Well.
I go, someone's in my house.
Well, someone could be in your house, but it might not be a ghost.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's
okay,
jumping
Alan.
To the most ridiculous conclusion.
That's
as
how
opposed
I live my life.
To looking at it and going, I know my imagination, the thing that drives me, the thing that makes me curious, and that's amazing, wants me to believe that it's an intelligent alien. But I also have to step back a minute and go, well, let's see if we can figure that out, as opposed to simply going, yep, that there's an alien. Now, if you see him land, take a cow, give you an anal probe, and then you could conclude that
that's
is
an
alien.
Yeah, okay. I only have three more signs.
Let's do it.
Of could an alien be there? What do scientists look for when they're looking for life?
Mm-hmm.
Robot probes.
Yeah, I love robot probes.
Alien signals may not be traveling in radio or light waves at all. Instead, they could be small objects that civilizations send out, like probes that they go on out.
Absolutely.
We have not explored most of our solar system.
Isn't the Voyager set to leave our galaxy this year?
I don't know.
Or last
maybe.
Year, maybe?
Yeah, there's something I think later on that I talk about the Voyager and like yeah. what percentage of the universe or something it's yeah. looked at. And I'm just like, it's so tiny.
I know.
But yeah, so for all we know, there could be like alien probes out like in our asteroid
Absolutely,
belt that are just like looking around for stuff. And they're probably, because these alien creatures are probably exceedingly more scientifically mm-hmm. advanced, they're probably like these golf ball sized probes are just mm-hmm. like, I'm a little snitch that's just like hanging out, getting information, and then flying back to home, you know? Because again, I think of like this idea of size. It's like, if an alien's trying to visit us, we can't get our human bodies to
right.
move that fast.
Right.
But a tiny, like, one-cell organism, we could get it to move
or they are here and moving so fast, we can't see them at all.
Maybe they're in the light.
There was an episode of Star Trek that was kind of like that. But ooh. I'm not going to go into that because there's plenty of pop culture to get to.
Evan, it's too much. This one's called, are you looking up some info?
When you're done, I want to reference an article I found about the methane.
I love it.
Yeah.
Do you want to do it now?
Do you want to?
Doesn't matter to
well,
me.
Well, this
I just have two
is,
more.
Again, I wish I would have known this person was an actual astrophysicist before we started this podcast, but my friend Sarah Lachman, I asked her the best source for news on extraterrestrials, and she sent me to a Reddit page where people just consistently post articles about extraterrestrials
Reddit.
And things like that. We will have a link to that on the episode description. This is from Spaceflight Now, Europe's ExoMars orbiter near start of methane sniffing science mission. Yeah, this is from March 7th, 2008. I usually sniff methane when I'm in the tub and I just kind of let a bubble come out and then like wait a second and go, ah, there it is.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Nearly a year and a half after arriving at the Red Planet, which, by the way, if you've never seen the footage of Mars from the rover, you gotta look at it.
Mars!
Europe's ExoMars orbiter is finally approaching a planned perch around 250 miles over the rust-colored world after repeatedly dipping into the Martian atmosphere to lower its orbit. The end of a year-long aerobraking campaign moves the ExoMars trace gas orbiter closer to starting regular science observations, a transition expected in April when the mission will begin measuring how much methane is in the Martian atmosphere, an indicator of potential ongoing biological or geological activity. Isn't that amazing?
That's awesome.
We're going to start getting those readings in April, or it's going to start researching them in April.
That's awesome.
And that's the other thing, too, and there are a couple of other articles in here
Geological.
I may or may not get to during the course of this episode, that, you know, we think about the planet. I think we've been very focused on the planets in our solar system, seeing if there's any life on them.
Yes.
What we sometimes forget is that those planets have moons.
Yeah. I have a little list of, like, later on of possible. I have my next segment is called "What type of exoplanet is a good candidate for life?"
Top five potentially habitable exoplanets closest to Earth
yes!
in 2018. Probably the exact same thing.
Yeah.
This is a video, so I will let you do that one when you get to it.
Oh, whatever. And two other ways that
yes.
you could look for aliens in the outside world.
Yes.
This is interesting.
You could stand outside your house and go, hey, aliens.
Please come down.
Is that one of them?
Are you here? No, calling with just your voice. Not an option. That's
two cans
not...
on a string.
Two what?
Two cans on a string.
Yeah, I think you'd have to throw one can really far and get a really long string.
I got a pretty good arm.
Yeah, you can do it. This next one is really interesting. Not all aliens... maybe on a mission
right.
to find other creatures.
Right.
Like you were talking about this curiosity thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some aliens that are like, I'm going to be a hermit.
Or
and
they're
like,
curious to
I'm
a
gonna,
point. Like my cat was curious about what's in that toy because he knows this is his safe zone. It's not going to hurt him.
Right.
But a lot of creatures are curious simply for their own survival and much past their own survival. They could give a shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could meet there could be other alien people that maybe like at the same level of technology as us.
They just don't care.
Or, or they just don't care or that like they're fearful for some reason or
absolutely.
Whatever. And so they're just like trying not to broadcast their existence.
Yeah.
But
they just want to be left alone.
They just want to go just live their lives. But there's a theoretical physicist, Freeman Dyson. He argued that that other alien species might be developing technology to siphon energy from a nearby star.
Mm.
And so they can look at these, what they call Dyson spheres, mm-hmm. probably named after our guy.
That has played a part in Star Trek Next Generation before.
Really?
Yeah.
I love this. That the spheres that kind of surround the planet mm-hmm. would throw off some waste heat.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we could see that mm-hmm. infrared radiation that comes off of that, we could be like, oh, there's something taking the energy from
that's
that
awesome.
Sun.
Yeah, yeah.
And like using that energy. Yeah. So the researchers with the ATA, the Allen Telescope Array, and they're just looking for signs of that kind of radiation.
That's awesome.
Which I think is really cool.
That's really cool.
I don't really think about that, but I mean, like, we were thinking about black holes as like mm-hmm. these like space station stops are like, oh, I'm gonna recharge my ship.
Right.
Like similar things could be done with our sun. I mean, we use solar energy
absolutely.
All the time.
Why not?
We're not using like
Well, because we've only figured out how to gather the solar energy in such small capacity.
Or like, yeah, using like the light.
Right.
You know, the light solar energy.
But if we could put something in space that could power our entire planet.
Yeah. Could use like the actual like hydrogen.
A,
off
the fossil
the
fuels industry would just not let that happen. But
they
B,
never would.
If we could. It'd be,
that'd be
a
awesome.
Huge game changer.
Yeah, it's huge. And then this last one is like ridiculously like bizarre and
awesome.
Ridiculous. But I was
wait.
Just like, I have to include it. This one I called Stardance.
Okay.
Other people have proposed that highly advanced civilizations could be advanced astro engineers.
Sure.
And they could move stars
what?
Into geometric alignments that are unlikely to occur by chance, thus communicating, hey, y'all, like, we're over here.
So you're saying they could literally move stars around in space to actually form a message, like somebody proposing to his wife using that little thing on the back
using
of a plane.
Using the stars, yeah, that could be it. Like, it could be, like, skywriting.
If I ever look up and see Glowthorpe, will you marry me? I'm going to be like, oh!
There's a problem. Yeah, isn't that so weird? But, like, I think that...
It's awesome
ridiculous.
To imagine. I think it's on the outskirts of actual
it's so ridiculous.
Scientific reality.
But yeah, like I can't believe that this
like,
was,
how
like, showed up in my research.
Star?
I was like, what?
How could you even move a star without causing devastation
again,
to everything
like,
around
they
it?
They could have ridiculous technology that they're just like, oh, we get to like move stuff.
They could have ridiculous technologies. Oh, R.I.P. Dolores Riordan.
What?
It was Cranberry's thing.
Oh. You're cute.
Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm trying to see if there's anything in my Stardance that... Yeah, they said, for instance, aliens could spin and spin small and extremely dense stars called the neutron stars mm-hmm. in just the right way. They could make the stars emit light like a beacon. So they could like make the stars flash.
Basically, an alien society that is so advanced
yeah.
they have turned our entire universe into a light bright
into a disco light bright, like that's what's
wow.
going on. But yeah, those are like the ways in which scientists are like keeping an eye out
yeah.
for other species of aliens.
Well, you know, sometimes it's important to keep your eye out to the exterior of the planet, but also maybe according to astrobiology magazine, also from this Reddit that Sarah Lechman directed me to.
Why do you say Sarah's name like this?
Because it's fun.
Oh, okay.
Could shallow biospheres exist beneath the icy ceilings of ocean moons? Alien life could potentially exist on the undersides of the icy shells of Jupiter's moon Europa.
Yes.
And other frozen worlds thanks to the intersection of chemical energy rising up from hydrothermal vents on the ocean floor and oxidants diffusing down from the surface. There are some people that think that there could be aliens underneath the crust of our own ocean. There's
oh.
probably not. They're not astrophysicists. They're
huh.
just people who like the movie Pacific Rim. However... That
oh.
is a possibility to them.
Was that in Pacific Rim?
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Global oceans exist hidden beneath the icy crust of bodies such as Jupiter's moon Europa, Ganymede and Callisto, and Saturn's moons Enceladus and Titan. Unlike Earth's oceans, which are heated from above by the sun, these vast water bodies are likely warmed from below by hydrothermal vents in the seafloor. One potential source of the key building blocks of life in these hidden oceans could be chemical reactions between the seawater and the seafloor or the hydrothermal vents. That, to me, is the most exciting thing because it was like I was talking about the moons earlier, and that's probably exactly what you were talking about, too.
Yeah.
When you were talking about exoplanets and everything, is that even though the planets, most of the planets in our solar system, even if they had life on them at one point, the conditions have just become too harsh on their surfaces. Why not? You know, if we know, because that's what you need water and you need warmth. In some cases, not even that much warmth.
Yeah.
There's species on this planet that survive in chillingly cold temperatures.
I mean, warmer than the super beginning of the Big Bang.
Yes.
But yeah.
And
or I guess it was hot then.
If we can assume that there is water somewhere on those planets and that it's possible for them to be heated from the inside, there would almost have to be life there.
There's I have a little section on Europa that I'll read now that in 2012, there were 68 new species of bacteria that were found on our planet at like the crust of our oceans, at like the in our ocean environments. So that's like kind of the leap that they went to. They were like, okay, there are these vast frozen oceans on Europa. If you know, if they're like, okay, it is too cold like on the surface, we're gonna just like burrow in
absolutely
and keep living underneath.
Evolution.
There's no reason to think that that wouldn't happen. So NASA researchers are developing a probe dubbed the Europa Clipper.
Nice.
I think this is in 2015, so it may have already happened or it may not have happened yet because we've had a change in administration. Or they're still working on it. But this Europa Clipper would do flybys by Europa, studying the plumes of water vapor that are bursting from Europa's South Pole.
And that's where we could likely find microorganisms that are technically extraterrestrial life. The other thing is, you know, we go back to the whole, like we talked about before, like the amino acids from meteorites and things like that.
Yeah.
If you look at a meteorite or a comet or something like that, and you think about where that meteorite or comet could have come from, it is potentially an alien planet, an alien civilization millions of years ago that blew up for some reason.
Yeah.
And all those materials are stuck to those rocks being hurtled through space.
Yeah.
And they encounter us. What if all species on this planet are just creations of old, thought to be extinct extraterrestrial life
that is
restarted here on Earth?
You know, there is a, that reminds me, I think I didn't include this in my research because I thought it was just funny.
Yeah.
There was, sorry, I got distracted by like my own thoughts. There was a job posting that I think went viral for a little bit with NASA about cleaning, like their job was to like clean the spaceship to make sure that there were no no microbes and things on the outside of the ship.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that it was like, your job is to clean the ship. Right. But they were just like, we need someone who can like engineer a way to make sure that we do not deposit Earth life forms other places and we don't collect other things from other places. I mean, it'd be great to collect things from other places, but they just were like,
but
we need
only
to make
if we
sure
intend
that,
to.
Like, that like the materials that are going in and out of our Earth atmosphere is cool.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was really interesting.
I think it's great.
I thought that was cool.
Hey guys, this is Evan.
Hey, Jason Underwood.
And if you're enjoying listening to The Lucky 10,000, then come on over to a podcast where nobody's ever getting lucky, ever.
Here on The Lucky 10,000, you're here to learn, but with the bearded ones, we're here to make you laugh.
And maybe you'll learn something while you're laughing.
Yeah, learn something, like, about Batman. I mean, we were on a stint of Matlock for a while. It was funny to me.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's not how you sell
anything.
Come
on over and listen to the Bearded One podcast, I guess. I like it.
I'd be a shit salesman.
Come buy this car. I mean, I drove it once. You probably wouldn't like it.
Yeah, you don't want to.
You know what? Fuck this. Don't listen to Bearded One. Come on, check us out. Bearded One's comedy podcast on the Bearded Pods Network.
I knew that.
I didn't know that.
Well, that's why we're here, listening to The Lucky 10,000. You learn something new with every episode.
And while you're here at the Bearded Pods Network, you might want to come and give us some pod love. We're Teddy and the Bassman.
We cover all sorts of subjects, speak with tons of interesting guests, and entertain you with a melange of vintage commercials and jingles and a whole plethora of eclectic music.
You might even learn something from us as well. It'll probably be about bondage, but...
Teddy and the Bassman.
Would you like to be hit with a little pop culture?
Please pop me in the culture
base. I didn't even plan on talking about this, but since you brought up the whole aliens ignoring us because we're not civilized enough or we're not advanced enough earlier in the show.
Like, oh, you're just a little baby. I don't want to play with you.
Right. I didn't want to bring much Star Trek into it. Because
but you're gonna.
You can't. There's so many other sci-fi things other than Star Trek. Star Trek inherently is going to be filled with aliens.
Okay,
but
before you do this Star Trek thing, I'm going to go pee.
Oh, go for it.
And I'll be right back.
I'll save the episode while you do that, just
commercial
to be
break.
Safe.
Never.
All right, we're back in. Did you enjoy your pee?
I did. It was fantastic.
Okay, so the one Star Trek movie I want to bring up that I think is a great way of analyzing a lot of things about human nature, but also the fact that we have to sort of show alien civilizations that we've moved beyond our baser instincts in order for them to take notice, hopefully.
Yeah.
Because they could be assholes, but hopefully they're smart and world-weary and everything. It's the what many people consider to be the best Star Trek The Next Generation movie. It's called Star Trek First Contact, which is the only movie that dealt with the Borg. And what happens in the movie is, what happens in the movie is the Borg have realized that they're not going to be able to defeat the Federation.
What's a Borg?
I've told you about that Borg, the cyborg alien things on Star Trek.
Yes.
We talked about it like the first episode, I think.
I remember things.
Yeah. Well, they are this species of cybernetic organisms who are bent on just simply assimilating every civilization they come across.
Yes, they're white people.
Yes, they're white people.
I got it.
And they realize that the one thing they can't do is defeat the Federation, which is where all the Star Trek ships are. They're in the military sort of navy known as the Federation of Planets.
Okay.
And they realize that the way things are, they're not going to be able to defeat them. So what do? You go back into the past when they're at a weaker point and assimilate the culture from there.
Genius.
The Enterprise gets wind of this and follows them back and realizes that what they have done is they've gone to stop, quote unquote, first contact, which when the Enterprise moves through space, it's moving on warp drive, which is warping space and time.
So like
to get from
Star
one
Wars,
point of space to the other.
Warp speed.
Sort of, yeah. It just basically is, you know, if you ever seen a picture of the Enterprise, it's got the two long things on the back of it.
Yeah.
Those, and they have to be far away from the rest of the ship because those things are actually responsible for warping space and time around the ship so that it can travel quickly through the universe.
Okay.
So warp travel had to be discovered in order for us to have that technology now. So a couple of hundred years before Star Trek Next Generation, still our future, but their past, a scientist named Zefren Cochrane is testing warp flight.
This is so interesting how you're talking about like time in like the Star Wars universe, like it's a real thing.
No, Star Trek universe.
Star Trek universe.
Well,
please come back to the podcast.
You start to feel like it is kind of a real thing because he's a character that was referenced a little bit.
Okay.
I'm friends with Captain Picard. So.
Obviously.
So he discovers warp drive.
What does Zac Efron do?
Spock is a... Zac Efron. He starred in a couple of High School Musical movies.
I love
and
it.
And then he got addicted to drugs and went into rehab and came back and he's stunningly gorgeous. Anyway, what was I talking about? I've completely left the
You were talking about...
Oh, the Vulcans. The Vulcans.
The Vulcans.
The Vulcans were the first alien species that humanity made peace with. And the Vulcans were able to help us increase our technological output tenfold. So they... Because they were advanced beyond us. But the only reason, according to First Contact, that the Vulcans landed on Earth, because they were passing by Earth, they checked it out and went, these people are too fucking primitive. We don't want anything to do with them. And then they got wind of Zefram Cochrane's warp engine test. So they're like, oh, these guys discovered warp travel. Maybe they're more advanced than we thought. So they land and introduce themselves to us, which starts us on the path for this wonderful future that Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, proposed.
Cool.
So the Borg's plan is to stop First Contact.
Ooh.
So that in the future, we are never able to advance enough technologically to stop them.
To get the warpies.
Yeah. So that's an example of,
okay.
because in the movie,
it's like time travel and aliens.
Yes. Well, time travel and aliens is basically Star Trek in a nutshell anyway.
I guess that literally is true.
Yeah.
That's like, if it's like Star Trek :
Time travel and aliens. Yeah, pretty much.
Subtitle. I love it.
So I didn't intend to talk about that movie, but it's a fun movie. It is the example of, in order to attract a higher civilization, you have to show that you have the potential to be communicated with by that higher civilization.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, I look at an anthill and I might check it out and investigate it, but I'm not going to want to communicate with it.
Yeah, we're not going to be like, oh, tell me all your knowledge, anthill, because we just perceive it as being like, bah.
But if one of those ants all of a sudden pulled out a laser sword, I'd go, oh, let's check this out.
Intrigued.
Yeah.
Tell me more, ant. Is that a lightsaber I see?
Or are you just happy to see me, ant?
Gross.
Do you want to go back to your science, or do you want to keep going with pop culture?
I think
culture?
We need to keep going with pop culture. I need to hear more.
Okay, well, I basically took the tact of putting alien movies... mainly movies, but there are other things like we talk about how the Earth is an abundance of different kinds of species.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great episode of South Park where they find out that Earth is actually just a reality show created by aliens. And they find out that in space, the way things usually work is one species is on each planet. Kind of like Star Wars, you know, you've got the planet full of Ewoks and you've got the planet full of this.
Oh, right,
and like,
of course.
They took species from all these other planets and put them together on Earth because that would be entertaining. It's like,
oh my gosh.
It's like a house, it's like Big Brother where you put a bunch of people together whose personalities are going to clash. And so,
oh my gosh, so you're saying that Earth is just other aliens' reality TV show?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
It's a great episode.
That's awesome.
But
what are the different species? I don't
everything.
Get it.
All the animals.
Oh,
like, so there's a planet of giraffes somewhere. There's a planet of zebras somewhere.
Up.
There's a planet of humans somewhere. And they just took a little bit from each of those planets and put us all together on one planet so that chaos could ensue. And it did. And it's entertaining.
That's really upsetting.
It's a great episode. But I mainly did movies. And what I wanted to do, because there's just so much to talk about in pop culture as far as aliens are concerned.
Do we need to operate as if this is a two-part episode?
Yes.
So what should we do? Just like keep on trucking and you'll deal with it and edit?
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
Keep on trucking. Keep on off the road, big rigs, racing.
Dirt bikes.
Thank you for being a part of the Lucky 10,000. Email us at lucky10,000@gmail.com. Find Lucky 10,000 on Twitter at lucky_10k. And visit our podcast network site at beardedpodsnetwork.com.